Christopher August is a devoted father, coach, facilitator, and co-founder of Beats in Breath and Masculine Mastery, who is on a mission to create a more conscious, connected world. Through his grounded presence, intuitive guidance, and visionary leadership, Christopher has become a beacon of inspiration, empowering thousands of individuals from around the globe on their journey of self-discovery. With over 15 years of experience in the realms of personal and leadership development and holistic wellness, he has deep understanding of what it takes to help people break free from their own limitations, discover their higher purpose, and become the greatest, most authentic version of themselves. And I met you through our dear friend, Aaron Abke.
That's right.
Who reached out to me asking if I wanted to come experience a breathwork ceremony with cannabis. And I was like, that sounds awesome and also a little bit scary, so let's do it. And I did it. It was amazing. Really glad that I did it. I'm sure we'll get into that during this episode, but let's just start with your background and then eventually get to the near-death experience thing. I know you were in the Peace Corps, right?
Yeah.
So let's start there.
Yeah. So brief synopsis. So I was in about 2011, 2012, I was finishing my master's degree in business leadership in Buffalo, New York, where I grew up. And, you know, that experience was great because I was pursuing something that I really wanted to learn more about and how to become a more authentic and embodied leader. And of course, this time I'm in my mid 20s and this subject just fascinated me. And so as I was going through my master's degree, I was working at a tech firm in Buffalo, you know, kind of going through the motions, doing what everybody does out of college, climbing the corporate ladder. And I was being called upon these higher ups, the president, vice president, to really begin to expand my role and my capacity for what I was doing at this firm. And so on paper, you know, everything looked pretty good. I was in my mid 20s. I was making good money. I had a new car. I had a great apartment. I was partying. I was dating great women. You know, it was all fulfilling at that time. But I remember there was this sort of like series over this course of maybe 6 to 8 months where I just started feeling like the life was getting sucked out of me. Mm. I wasn't feeling as fulfilled as I once was. The partying was kind of getting old. And I knew I needed to make a change. I was like this sort of like empty black hole inside of me is the best I can describe it. And it was from that point where I started to tune in with like, what was really true for me? What did I want to do? Did I want to continue down this path? Yeah, if I did, maybe I could reach up to maybe a higher level management position and so forth, or I could do something different. There was this world of possibility that started to present itself. And one of the things that was very important to me was helping other people. And I just didn't feel like I was doing that in this massive corporation. And so I was asking for a sign. I was praying, asking, show me a sign, show me a sign. Well, I literally got a sign. I was driving home on a Tuesday afternoon. This thing was 2012. Going down the highway, I see a billboard and the billboard says, are you ready to answer the call? And in the bottom right-hand corner, it said sponsored by the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what the fuck is the Peace Corps? Never heard of this. And so I go home, I Google it, and I find out that for anybody listening that doesn't know what the Peace Corps is, it's a grassroots organization ran, one of probably the only good things that the American government does, and runs this amazing program that really you get to immerse yourself in other cultures by volunteering as a health, business, agriculture, teaching English type of volunteer. And they serve in 80 different countries around the world. So this very much intrigued me. It checked the box of helping people, checked the box of traveling, checked the box of connecting deeper with another culture and land. And so long story short, I applied through about a year, a little over a year, through many different tests. It was very rigorous. They tested you mentally, physically, everything to ensure you're a good fit. And I got a letter on a August evening and it said, you have been accepted to Peace Corps Tanzania in Africa, and you have 7 days to decide. And so, you know, that was like that awakening moment. It was like, oh shit, this is really happening. And of course, I went through all these tests. I couldn't turn back now. And so I, at that point, made the decision that I would leave. And 3 months later, I was boarding a plane to Tanzania, Africa, 8,000 miles away from Buffalo, New York, with a cohort of 35 people. And I ended up living and serving there in a very small village for 2 years of my life. And so, you know, when I'm talking about living in the village, you're living in the village, mm-hmm. cooking over a fire, no modern amenities, no electricity, no running water. So being in that experience was a massive catalyst, as you can probably imagine. So I'll pause there. There's a lot to say about that experience, but that was very, very transformative.
Well, I'm intrigued about this experience, especially because you grew up in New York State. So like, I could imagine that was a huge culture, societal, economic, spiritual, everything, culture shock in every way, shape, and form. So what were some of the, I guess, most positive aspects of that experience of living in Africa for 2 years?
You know, it was this scale of polarity where it was like, yes, very positive, and I left there feeling so grateful for it, but also very challenging. So the positive aspects of it was a reconnection with the land. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us have been disconnected from the land, from the earth, living in modern day convenience, living in these perhaps beautiful houses. It's great, but we don't have that same connection with nature and with the rhythms of life. And so for me, going back to sort of what I may say, these primal roots, they really gave me this deep perspective. You know, you're taking baths, bucket baths, you're washing hands by clothes, you know, all around me were mountains and grasslands and beautiful nature. And I saw the way people live there. And the community aspect of people coming together to support each other, you know, was some of the most beautiful things I've ever witnessed. I was held and taken care of. There was not one person that in that village that spoke English. I was the only white person for miles. Mm-hmm. But they took me in like family. And I realized through that experience, I did a lot of beautiful things there and great projects, but I felt so indebted to them by the end of that experience. And it also gave me time to self-reflect. Whereas before, I was kind of caught up in the matrix, living the busy life like we all do. And I didn't really have the time and space to read and to write and to be with myself. And of course, through that, you face a lot of shit. You face a lot of darkness. And so that's where some of the challenging moments came in, where you feel very isolated and alone. But it was necessary to really be that catalyst to do that deeper inner work.
What was the integration like when you got back to the US?
That was harder than going there. So going there, it was, I had my challenges, of course. You know, you get thrown in within 3 days. I'm in a house of seven different Tanzanian people living in the same house. This family don't speak a lick of English, sleeping in this crazy tiny room. So that in itself was an adjustment and a culture shock. But reflecting back on it, coming back home, I came back to Buffalo, is start of winter, and I just went into like a 6 month depression. I was super depressed. I would go to the grocery store, there's 15 different types of toothpaste. You know, like, it's like, what do we do? Why do we have all of these things? And it was very overwhelming for me. And I came back to the same place where I had grown up. And, you know, everybody's kind of doing the same thing. You know, I had changed dramatically in so many different ways. And so that was a big wake up call. I eventually got out of my funk and got myself back on my two feet, but it was a really tough experience.
Did you reintegrate into your corporate job that you had left before, or a new corporate job, or
I didn't end up going back to a corporate job. I ended up getting gave me a stipend, like $8,000 for serving. And so I used that money and I started to invest in different certifications, coaching certifications, herbalism, energy work, breath work.
Was it being in Africa that made you interested in these things?
All of it. Yeah.
Okay. And when did the near death experience come in?
So that was in Africa. That was about a little over a year and change into my Peace Corps experience. I was traveling to Zimbabwe and Zambia for this festival with this girl that I just met, who happens to be the mom of my beautiful son. And, you know, she was also a Peace Corps volunteer at the time. And we go and we're traveling to Zambia, and it was one of those trips where it was like everything was set up perfectly. So many like thrilling experiences. I had a very much an adventurous spirit. And so when we were there the second day, I saw this thing for whitewater rafting. I was like, we should go and do that. I never had whitewater raft in my life, but let's go check it out
in Africa,
dude, in the Zambezi River, which is one of the most intense rivers in the world. And not thinking about this, of course, but just plunging myself into the experience and literally getting plunged into the river. We're about like 10 rapids in and we hit a class 5 rapid. And, you know, I had no business rafting a class 5 rapid.
No way. Especially your first time, dude.
No,
I whitewater raft quite a bit because my family spends a lot of time in Colorado. So I know.
Get it.
Yeah, dude. That's insane.
Dude. And like, of course we're in Africa. There's no rules or regulations here. It's just like, we're going to go with these guides. And of course with the guides and people, but I had found out after the trip that someone had died on that same rapid. So we're approaching the rapid and I ended up getting ejected out of the boat.
Were you in the front?
I was front left.
Okay. I knew it. Yep. I knew it. Yeah. That's front left. The people that are in the front are always the ones who fall off.
Got bumped out. Yeah. I fell backwards, caught the rapid, and I rode the whole class 5 down, pretty much underwater. Wow. And that experience was humbling to say the least. And to have now my respect for water is very immense, but you know, being underwater and being essentially like I was on the verge of death where I had drowned. I had taken in so much water, you know, you come up for air and boom, you're sucked back into this whirlpool. And it was there. I literally was fighting it for maybe perhaps the first 30 to 45 seconds, just like resisting. And there's so many lessons in this experience. And there was a point then I just couldn't hang on anymore. So I just like let go. It's the only thing you can do. And I remember looking up and there was this like light on top and it ended up becoming very peaceful. But I was just basically at this point where I was losing my life, losing consciousness. And I just remember just out of nowhere, someone yanks me out of the water, puts me up on this kayak, and I just start vomiting all this water up from my lungs. And it was just super intense. And I realized in that moment, I'm like, holy shit. Like I'm alive. Like it took me a while to come back, started breathing again. I was like, whoa, like just if anybody is listening to this, had a near death experience, you kind of understand it. It's so hard to put into words, but it was this like deep, deep gratitude for life, for being alive, for my breath. And there was just like, I was practicing breath work during that time. And so all of this started coming together. It's like, whoa, like I'm alive. I'm breathing. I'm well. And that was massive, massive moment for me in that time period.
You know, that's such an interesting point too on just the significance of breath. Like one of the first things people say if they're unsure if someone is dead or alive is, oh, is he breathing? Obviously yep. They check for a heartbeat sometimes, but the first thing people say is he breathing? Is he breathing? So we almost take for granted because these are both heartbeat and breath and some other functions of the body are just happening in the background unconsciously without our having to focus on it. Right. Mm-hmm. And we take it for granted, but, a good friend of mine, Dr. Edith Ubuntu Chan, contextualized the importance of breath during this course that we taught called Super Wellness, where she was training under a survivalist, I think. And the survivalist was like, you can go typically 3 weeks without food,
mm-hmm.
3 days typically without water. Obviously people have gone further than that. This is in a survival situation. I've interviewed people who've done water fast for like 60 days.
Yep.
Someone claimed to be a breatharian too, but point being three weeks typically without food in a survival situation, 3 days without water, only typically 3 minutes in a survival situation without breath. So that just shows like that water is infinitely times or exponentially times more important than food. And then breath is exponentially times more important than water to our being alive. So it's really beautiful to hear you say you came up and you're like, oh, I'm alive. I'm breathing. And so you were already practicing breath work at that time.
Yeah. So in the Peace Corps, synchronistically, I was given a thumb drive. We used to trade thumb drives, like movies and TV shows that get bored in your village. And someone had handed me a thumb drive, and on the thumb drive was a folder named Kundalini Yoga. I'm like, what's Kundalini Yoga? And so I, you know, you're in the village, you got nothing else to do. So I popped it in, and I realized, like, whoa, there's some power here.
Yeah.
So I started practicing Kundalini in the village and, through these videos, these kriyas. And, I just started to be like, wow, this is powerful technology. 'Cause in Kundalini, as you know, and perhaps anybody listening, the breath is the central focus, right? And that breath of fire, that rapid pace breathing, it awakens the Kundalini energy. And so I was having like these profound moments. So yeah, that was like the start of my journey of realizing the power of my breath, and then almost losing my breath. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting here. What's going on? And realizing that, wow, you know, breath is life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to get into some of the teachings that you've dove into related to the breath and what some, you know, ancient esoteric and spiritual traditions have said about it. You were talking earlier about the Rishi and what it says about breath.
Yeah, you know, there's so many ancient teachings, and you look back into, you know, Buddhist texts, you look into all different spiritual texts, breath is mentioned. I mean, even in the Bible, breath is mentioned, right? So breath is this universal spirit, which what it is, that transcends time and space and is a technology, is a tool for expansion. And again, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we don't often think about our breath. We breathe on average, again, this is an average, there's either more or less, 20,000 plus times a day. And to think that we don't bring any awareness to this, it's an automatic function that just happens. What happens if we just bring just a small percentage of conscious awareness and intention to the breath? Things begin to change. And a lot of these ancient cultures knew this. And so, you know, looking back, and we'll use the example of the Vedic texts and the Rishis, which is a very advanced civilization of people that perhaps you can interpret that they were drinking plant medicines, different brews of plant medicines, and they were all in this place in which they're working together to expand their consciousness and, of course, expand the consciousness of the collective at the time. And so there's this legend, which I first learned about when I was going through one of my breathwork trainings, one of many, and they were talking about how there's this legend that they had this brew that they drank called Soma, and nobody can really say what the brew was. My guess would be it'd be some sort of plant material that would create altered states of consciousness. And it was through this brew that they would reach, you know, expanded states, higher visions, and receive these visions, integrate them into whatever it is they were creating. And the legend goes that they ran out of this brew of some sort, and that plant matter was no longer available at that time. And so they turned to their breath to reach these same states of consciousness and realize that through their breath, through the manipulation and control of their breath, that they can do some wild things, right? And you've seen this now across time, and even in most recent cases, you look at Wim Hof's a good example of what he's been able to do, of running marathons and deserts, of climbing mountains, all through the control of breath, right? And, you know, a Swami in the 70s when they were testing him, I think it was at the University of Kansas, where they were showing, he was showing them how literally through slowing down your breath, you slow down the heartbeat, and you can actually go into a place where you're perceivably dead, not living, but you're in this like yogic sleep. Right. And it's like, he was saying he trains people that, the more you can breathe out, like, so like he does like a 32 second exhale. If you can get up to 32 seconds, you can literally manipulate your reality and the, what you're experiencing. So I was reading this and watching all these videos. I'm like, holy shit, like this is wild.
Yeah.
Like just through your breath, you can do all of these things. And so that's when the sort of, you know, the lightning bolt went off. It's like, yeah, this is just not something to just keep us alive. Yes. That's a very important function. But it's a gateway to liberation.
Right.
It's a gateway to some really incredible states.
Yeah. It's the most important thing to keeping us alive, but it's also possibly the most important thing to co-creating this reality, this experience.
That's it, man.
That's interesting. Another thing that came up for me when you brought that up, and I think Joe Dispenza has touched on this, Wim Hof probably has as well, but because we look at breath as this unconscious process that's happening in the background, if we can point our conscious awareness to our breath, we can manipulate our breath, we could then deduce that we would likely be able to take these other unconscious processes like rise and fall of temperature in your body, or these things that are happening in the background, let's say, and manipulate them as well. Have you played with that at all? Or
for sure. I've played in many different realms of breathing. So if we were to break breathing down, right, they fall into two different areas. You have sympathetic breathing and parasympathetic breathing. And with both, you have different benefits that you can, and ways you can expand and elevate yourself in whatever way. So of course, like on a base level, if you're feeling stressed, anxious, and overwhelmed, you want to breathe in a parasympathetic state, right? To slow down the heartbeat, slow down the rhythm, and therefore reach a more relaxed, calm, and focused, centered state within yourself.
Let's do it right now.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So listen and guide the people who are listening or watching.
Yeah. So okay. The best breath to do if you're feeling stressed and anxious, which is most of this world, everybody's stuck in this fight or flight response. And so what I always do is like, just come to a simple 4-8 breath. Okay. So we'll just do maybe what? 2-3 minutes
cool.
This breathing.
Yeah.
So just inviting, if you're driving, don't do this, but if you're at home, whatever.
If you're listening to this on 1.5 speed, slow it down.
Slow it down, close your eyes, and just ground your feet into the earth beneath you, into the floor, whatever it is, surface that you're in. And my invitation would be just to tune in with your breath. Tune into how you're breathing in this current moment. No judgment, just pure observation. Noticing if the breath is deep or if the breath is shallow. And as you tune in to your rhythm of breath, I invite you to bring in some intention and some consciousness into your breathing as we begin to drop into a slower pace of breath, breathing into our diaphragm. So my invitation is to exhale out all of the air and breathe in and exhale. Again, breathing in through the nose. And exhale out of the mouth. Breathing in and filling your diaphragm, your lower belly. And gentle, slow, steady exhale. See if you can go a little deeper into the abdomen, breathing in and release. We'll do one more, breathing all the way in, deepening the breath. And exhale. Just keeping your eyes closed for just a moment longer. Tuning in to any sensations that you feel within your body temple. Just noticing the subtle presence and awareness that's available in this moment. I'm just inviting you now to open your eyes and notice what's going on in the room around you. And just take notice to what you feel.
Awesome.
Yeah, simple. Doesn't need to be complicated, you know? just a few breaths and back at center.
Because it's such an unconscious process of the body, we forget how impactful that it can be. And obviously this is becoming more trendy, you could say, but I think it's for good reason. I think it's like, as a lot of humanity is waking up to ourselves and to the nature of this reality and all that's been hidden from us and all the deception, et cetera, et cetera. It makes sense that we're coming back to the importance of the breath, but I think there's a tendency to look at it in a very, dare I say, like materialistic lens and leave the spiritual components out of it.
100%.
How much has diving into breath work helped to facilitate a deeper connection with God for you?
That's a great question, man. You know, many ways. It's the way I like to facilitate and the way that I like to speak about the breath. I really like to speak at it through the lens of the metaphysical essence and the spiritual essence of breathing and what that does for us in the connection back to God, source, universe, self, whatever you want to call it. Breath, in the reason I just absolutely love working with my own breath and helping others do the same is because it transcends time and space, and it takes you to this liminal space, this etheric space where you can rest in presence, where you can rest in the essence and the core essence of yourself, which is beyond the stories, the identities, the attachments, the judgments, the beliefs, the limitations that we carry in our egoic human self. And it just takes you out of that, even if it's for a few moments, to rest in what we may call God presence or the God pocket, right? Where you're literally in that pure state of awareness. Mm. And the breath is that bridge that you cross. So another reference that I want to bring into this, which I've been deeply studying for a while now, there's a mystic and a teacher named Lars Meal. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He wrote a book, many books. One of my favorite books, which is not really a book you read from front to back, but it's more of a manual. It's called The Law of Light, The Secret Teachings of Jesus. And he decodes the Aramaic language. And in the Aramaic language, there's a term, Ruka de Kucha. Ruka de Kucha is the Holy Spirit. It's the breath. And then there's another term, Makuta de Shemaya. That is the kingdom of heaven. And so the translation is there, and how he describes is that how Yeshua performed miracles and healing was he would create a force field around himself through the power of his breath, through calling Ruka de Kucha, breathing into the third eye, Makuta de Shemaya, breathing into the heart. And this would create a force field of light. And through that, that is the bridge or the gateway to the higher worlds, where you exist beyond the human self, but you literally are emanating the electromagnetic field of light around you. Mm. And this is why it, for me, is like, as an advocate or somebody that is sharing breath, sharing it from this context of the, you know, metaphysical and spiritual way of breath and how that can really impact us and on a simple way, activate us and connect us back to our true self. And right now we are finding ourselves at a pivotal time in, you know, humanity and where we're going. And so tools like this, which is free, you can use it anytime, right, is one of the simplest, but most profound ways to connect back to yourself, your heart, your soul. Mm. And if we have more people connected in that way, this world looks very different.
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause it's having to focus inwardly when you focus on your breath. Have you heard of, I'm sure you have, I mean, dude, you're writing a book on breath right now, so you've probably heard it all, that the name for God, Yahweh, relating to the breath.
Yep.
And it's like, right?
Yeah, that's
Can you expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah. I used to practice that and still do from time to time. There's so many different practices I like to do with my breath, but breathing in Yahweh, like you just did, whether you can do it through the mouth, through the nose, through the mouth, whatever it is, that is, these are codes, they're seeds, these words, Yahweh, these are, they're like Sanskrit, just like Aramaic, they're transmissions that sort of activate,
right?
When you're repeating it as a mantra, and especially working with the breath, which let's take it one step deeper, the breath, and you trace it back to its Latin roots, right? Spiritus, it's spirit, it's inspiration.
Yeah.
It's to respire, right? And all of this is connecting with that true spirit, the spirit of God, the spirit of self.
Yeah.
And so very powerful practice.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. I've thought about that quite a bit. You just said it way better than I ever could, so I'm not going to follow up, but just like breath as it relates to God, God breathed life into us. We are breathing in God in and out, especially when we focus on Yahweh, that context. And like when we talk about Aramaic or Hebrew or like Hindi, these languages, they feel alive. And it,
yes,
there's something about breathing with mantras, like with Kundalini yoga, that I feel like it really does, I don't want to say program your body, but it almost like programs your body in your field in a very powerful way.
100%. Yeah. Absolutely. These languages. So like, if you look at the English language and you break it down, I'm by far not an expert, with any of this, but from what I understand, and my minimal understanding is that everything's been like cut in half. So the power of our words being spoken, although there's a lot of beauty in the English language, I love poetry and I love the way in which you can manipulate words to really bring out the essence of what's being said in a felt way, but it's still lacking this power.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're speaking and you're using mantras through Sanskrit or Hebrew or Aramaic, any of these ancient languages, something comes alive. It's activational.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you turn on the genetic code, right? Of
right.
something
yeah.
happening. So that's like, there's definitely something in that, which I would love to even dive deeper because I'm still at a base level with all of this understanding, but there's a lot there to be explored.
Yeah. I gotta give a shout out to one of my friends, Andrew Genovese. I sat with him.
I know Andrew.
Yeah. Andrew's a homie of mine. I sat with him 2.5-3 years ago and did what he calls dimensional breath work. And I've never done ayahuasca. I've never sat with ayahuasca. The only thing I've consumed that would put me in what you could call like a transcendental or a psychedelic state is mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But, just by breath alone, I was just catapulted to different realms, let's say. Like I was very clearly like not here, and I went back and saw like the childhood version of myself going through a traumatic experience that time, and I bawled deeply. And it's just wild the states that you can reach just by breath alone. And it's, you could really call it like getting high on your own supply.
For sure.
What are some of the crazier or the transformative experiences you've had when doing like very deep, prolonged breath work?
Oh man, there's so many. It's difficult to like pick one or another, but I will share an experience that I had 2 years ago. So I've been practicing breath work for over a decade now. And going through different programs, facilitator programs, and having to, you know, learn these different techniques, because the great thing about the breath is it's not just one static thing. There's so many ways to manipulate your breath, and the way in which you do it changes the way in which you experience different things. So I had an experience, two years ago now. I went into a dark room retreat. So I did 5 days of darkness in this place in Mezunte, Mexico. And I went down there, and there's this place that there's actually two places in Mezunte. This one place I was in, it was in a hotel, but they had three dark rooms. And basically you had to climb down this ladder, and you're in this like cave, essentially. It's all stone. You can't, it's full sensory deprivation. You can't hear anything on the outside, and it's pitch black. You can't see your hand in front of your face. Proper dark room. And so I'm in there, and just to kind of give like a brief overview of the experience. So, you know, I chose 5 days, because I just felt like that was best for me. And when you're in the experience, when you're in the dark room, especially the first 24 to 48 hours, you're basically in a really like, your melatonin begins to heighten. So you just sleep a lot. Mm-hmm. But after the second day into the third and fourth day, that's when things start to get interesting. So I'm like, all right, I'm awake now. I feel like I've gotten the rest I needed. Let's start playing around here and seeing what's up. So I started to do some pretty intense breath work, and I'm like, let's see where we can go, because I've done psychedelic, I've done ayahuasca, I've done all the things where I've had visions open up and DMT, endogenous DMT beginning to awaken. And I started to do this breath work, and I was probably maybe half hour in, 45 minutes. And I just started to see everything. I just reached out to you maybe last week or a couple of weeks ago. I was asking about CSF, and we'll get into that in a bit. Yeah. So I started to see how the spinal fluid was working up and down my spine into my brain. It was these light molecules that started to spiral up when they were moving in this like infinite
loop. Were you seeing this inwardly, or did you have your eyes open? I don't even know how to ask this as it relates to dark room. So you're in the pitch black darkness. Uh-huh. I'm assuming when you were doing breath work, you had your eyes closed.
I naturally just close them because it's more comfortable.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you were seeing like inwardly seeing what was happening inside of your cerebral spinal fluid.
Correct. So at the beginning, there was this fire, this like red fire, a correlation to the root chakra starting to burn. Right. And so I'm like, okay, I've done a lot of Kundalini, so I kind of understand how things work energetically. I've never quite seen them, but I've seen the graphics and visuals of them. But now I'm getting a real time experience. So the fire started burning at the root, and I saw the coiling, just like they picture like the snake moving up the spine. But what was different was there was these bursts of light that were happening, and they would travel, and then they would come back down, and they would start to circulate in this orbital motion through my body. And so I was starting to manipulate them because I can see them in real time and carry them up into my brain where the cerebral spinal fluid lives as well. And this fluid, it was like lighting up with like plasmatic energy. And these multicolored experience, it wasn't just white light. It was like colors that I've never seen before in sort of like our sort of perception through our eyes.
Yeah.
You see a certain range. This was a transcendental range of colors.
Right.
And so I'm like, holy shit. Like, and trying to sustain this, right? Because the excitement was there, but also I was like trying to figure out all of what was happening.
Right.
Started going with the breath, falling deeper. And all of a sudden I had this like blast where like the third eye just completely opened, and it was a complete fractal experience. And so I'm like, holy shit. Like, took that experience, left the dark room a few days later, trying to figure out what happened to me, what's going on, because like I can easily sit on a podcast or anywhere and talk about these visions,
right?
But I want to know what happened to me.
Right.
Like, what was going on?
Yeah.
And so since then, it's been an experience. And literally 3 weeks ago, I had an ayahuasca experience. It was like my sixth time sitting with Aya, sat with an amazing healer. Same thing started happening. But this time,
same exact thing.
Wow. He was starting to drum, and he was sitting in front of me, and he was singing Icaros to me. And there was like this activation happening, and I started going to the same state. And that's when I was like, I found Dr. Mauro Zapatera.
Yeah.
That's when I found, and I was like, holy shit, he was on your podcast. And so I'm like, oh my God, there's a correlation. Finally, I have some science to this that I can really talk about it. Cause if I'm going to write a book, I can't just speak from visions. I got to speak from science too. So all of this, I don't even know where we began here, but it's been profound, and it's been quite the journey. But that's the experience I felt called to share, cause it was very profound.
So what have you learned so far? I know you're just getting into it, like cerebral spinal fluid as it relates to the breath.
So, you know, there's multiple facets to this, right? There's the idea that this fluid, we don't know exactly what it is, but you were talking about like the fourth state of water, the fourth phase of water, which I've been interested in for many years, and how that then penetrates up into the brain, to the third ventricle, begins to open in the pineal gland. But the breath is, if we were to take it at its root, it's like this foundational force that's stimulating and controlling the movement of this fluid, right? And you can use the way you manipulate your breath, you can begin to activate this fluid, right? Whatever this fluid is, yeah. right? And allow that to dictate how things begin to awaken within you. And so for me, there's a deep fascination, and I'm actually having a conversation with him in a couple of weeks. He agreed to talk because I want to know more.
Man, it fascinates me too. And like, I'm always thinking about how all these pieces fit together in this larger canvas that was created by God. Right. And it's like, I'm thinking about Yahweh and how Yahweh relates to breath. Right. And then just by breathing, you can activate your cerebral spinal fluid. And what Morrow says is he postulates that cerebral spinal fluid is the bridge between us as beings and God. And then I'm thinking of all that as it relates to DMT, because just through breath, you can activate endogenous DMT, and DMT, they're calling the spirit molecule. And that's also the bridge to these other realms, and maybe the bridge to being able to see the realms that are all around us right now. We just can't readily perceive them, but that's like what helps activate, if you will, our ability to see these other realms. And talk about, like, you know, near death experiences, especially for people who've journeyed. There's, you know, some studies that have been done correlating, like, it's because that DMT is no longer inhibited by the, I think it's digestive enzymes or whatever it is. So the DMT just runs rampant in your body, and that's you bridging to the spirit world, just like tying all of these things together. It's so fascinating to me.
Dude, man. It's wild. And then the one step deeper is that the biggest storehouse of DMT is in the lungs.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this, it makes so much sense. It's like the breath is that bridge, because you are literally like enhancing the amount of oxygen you're taking into your lungs, and therefore stimulating all of this energy. And then one more step deeper, which was also given to me, is that, of course, you know, we have this genetic code, this matrix that lives inside of us through our DNA. And what scientists call junk DNA is bullshit. It's all latent code that hasn't been turned on, and you can turn it on through the breath. And so the next level to this, and why I'm so interested, is regarding the gene keys and the system of the gene keys, which I'm deep into and studying for 7 years. There's a correlation between breath and turning on your gene keys to elevate and activate your potential.
Incredible. Can you talk a little bit more on DMT as it relates to breath?
So my understanding, so the spirit molecule, I interviewed Rick Strassman many years ago. Uh-huh. This is back in like 2016. He came onto my podcast. It was a very interesting conversation, but a lot of it was like way above my head, because it's just very sciencey, and I'm not naturally like a science oriented person. I'm more like in the spiritual realm, but I respect the science, because for me, it's important to understand, and also for other people to understand, of what's actually happening. So, you know, so what happens, melatonin is very connected to endogenous DMT. So when you're breathing, or if you add any other plant substances like cannabis, which maybe we'll get into later, this is like your melatonin levels go up, and this is like the precursor to endogenous DMT turning on and having that experience. And so what I do know is that the biggest storehouse of that DMT is in your lungs. That is then connected to, of course, the pineal gland. And then we connect it and tie it into CSF and how that opens the pineal gland for us to be able to see through our true eye, which is the third eye, and then have that experience of these fractals, sacred geometry, colors happening. Yeah. And like you said before, this is happening all around us. We're existing in sort of, I think Dolores Cannon may have talked about this, like this net, this ethereal web, this net we live in. And that's all around us. It's just that with the human eye, we can't always perceive that. But when you turn on and open the pineal gland and this DMT gets secreted and activated, we begin to see the reality, the true reality that's existing around us.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There's two threads I want to pull on there as it relates to what you just said, this reality that's around us and being able to access it. And I've been sort of recontextualizing how I view reality by bringing back in ether, which has been left out of like modern quote science. Right. and that we're like swimming in this field of ether. But Dr. Edith, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't want to say this incorrectly, but she did a dark room retreat as well. And
nice.
One of the things that she said, and maybe you experienced this as well, is that after some time in dark room, she was able to pick up on the energetic signature of objects around her, like actually able to see them with her eyes. And it's just so interesting because it's like, that is the fundamental nature of reality itself. And we all have the ability to access it. It's just, we're living in this very materialistic world. But the other thing is, and I brought this up on so many episodes now, so it's kind of like a running joke, but whatever. It blew my mind. But I know two sets of kids that are not related, and I've seen one of them myself, that can read totally blindfolded. And like when you see it happen, it is incredible. And it's like, wow, our potential is so much greater than we've ever been led to believe. But I was just thinking about that in relation to what you just said about this reality that's all around us. It really is. It's all around us and we're swimming in it all the time. We just have been conditioned to think that we don't have these abilities.
It's so true. I hadn't heard that story. That's remarkable.
I'll show you the video after.
I would love to see that.
I can't put the video out publicly. I'm sorry, you guys, but I'll show Chris and you can message him and be like, hey, did you see the video? I'll show you the video.
Wow.
Yeah. I want to be respectful to these kids, but
I understand that. And I truly believe that because the experience that you just shared, through her and what she experienced in the dark room was very similar. Cause by day four, day five, like it's a very tiny room, but there's objects in the room.
Right.
And then what is objects? They're just energy
vibrating
a high level to make them solid.
Right.
Right. That's all it is. Right. So your perception of reality changes greatly. Even again, open eye. I was having open eyed visuals of everything and understanding that like, wow, yeah, this very limited perspective I have in my day-to-day life is not the true reality. And that by working with breath and other, you know, tools and practices, we can access the greater states of our consciousness and open ourselves up to a whole new world. And we can begin to integrate this material world with the spiritual world and have fun with it. Mm. Like, it's like, why we came here to play. I want to live my potential here. I don't want to just live in mediocrity. I want to see what's available. What can I do?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's like, we realize the material world is not different than the spiritual world. It is fundamentally a creation of the spiritual.
Exactly.
World. Yeah. Have you looked into any of Walter Russell's work, specifically related to everything? Like the true cause of everything is light, which is synonymous from his lens with God itself. But it's interesting, like these objects in darkroom, when you turn all light off, ironically, the objects themselves, you can perceive their light. And it's like, ah, that's the fundamental nature of that thing is light. That's its true nature.
Mm. I have not personally dove deep into Walter. I know Walter Russell, but I haven't dove deep enough to talk about that. But it makes sense. Right? Everything is light. And our faculties, our human faculties are turned off and our spiritual faculties are turned on, we can perceive that light, which mm-hmm. is all around us. And that is which is dark is illuminated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So back to my breathwork experience with Andrew, and I also want to get into the breathwork experience I had with you guys when I did Breathe with Cannabis, because that was incredible. But I don't know if you remember when I shared mine, it was completely different than everyone else's. And it was
like a refresher on that
childlike experience that I had, very playful, which is awesome. But, I know you've talked before about using breath to help heal and uproot some trapped or stored emotions or trauma. And in this breathwork experience that I had with Andrew, there was a lot of almost what you could call like child or like meditative reparenting, where I perceived a younger version of myself in a traumatic experience and really processed those emotions that I just never did at that time because I was, in a state of fight or flight, sort of disassociative, you could say. But it was deeply impactful and healing, and it was all accessed just by my breath. And if you could share any experiences you've had or any experiences you've facilitated for other people that stand out when it comes to healing trauma.
Yeah, it's a great question, because this world is traumatized. And I kind of break the breath. It's how I'm writing in my book. I break the breath into three parts, right? Heal, awaken, manifest. So when we're touching in the healing realm, which is sort of the first way in which we begin working with the breath, if we're going to work within three parts, we start with healing. We want to remove, I want to say remove, let's use the word maybe dissolve and integrate the parts that have been lost, rejected, abandoned, or betrayed within ourselves. And we all have these parts, right? And how the shadow begins to take a hold is that perhaps I'll just use an example. We're 6 years old, we're crying or we're screaming, and we're told that that is an acceptable behavior. And of course, over time, this happens again and again through our caregivers or our teachers or whoever it is. And we say, that's not acceptable. I'm going to put that aside, and I'm going to put and stuff that down. Well, what happens then in that moment, which may not seem like a big deal in that moment to perhaps your parents or anything, is that you are taking that whatever emotion is or experience, and you're lodging it within your body and you're storing it somewhere. And over time, this creates this sort of inner conflict and turmoil that begins to build and mount. And of course, if we have any traumatic experiences, and it could be something minor as what I just shared, or something very severe, we're not taught on how to process that through the lens of our emotions. And therefore, we get stuck in these habitual patterns where over time, this mounts into a fight or flight trauma response that we're stuck in habitually. We're frozen in it. And this then creates other patterns where we're in a state of stress, our cortisol levels are spiked, adrenaline's high, and all of this. And we're just basically running around like, you know, anxious, stressed beings. And of course, that's not our natural state. And so through the breath, what the breath is, and the way I like to explain it in its most simplest terms, is that this, through the breath, you're cultivating prana, chi, life force energy. This energy has its own consciousness, just like plant medicine, right? If we're working with cannabis, ayahuasca, mushrooms, whatever, these plants have their own consciousness. So does the breath. The breath knows exactly where to go, where you're holding tension, tightness, or stress in your body. And so when you let go and surrender into your breath, it will find the places where there's these sort of bubbles of blockages, you know, and I can almost see them when I'm doing sessions with people of where they're holding them. And oftentimes, most of the most common places where people hold is in the heart. So they're processing some level of grief or sadness. In the solar plexus or in the sacral, there's a lot of tightness in the belly causing constipation, constriction. And when these areas begin to sort of burst open through the power of life force and prana, and as that breath goes through there, we begin to have this sort of emotional release. And this emotional release may manifest as crying, laughing, yelling, shaking, whatever it is, doesn't matter. That energy is being liberated and freed from the body. And that's why somatic healing is so important. We often want to go through the lens of the mind and say, oh, I got this trauma, and work through the story of it. That's important at some point, but it's through the lens of the body and the somatic vehicle that we're in that we can liberate ourselves. And so a big part of sort of what you shared, you know, we go deep into inner child healing because it's the child within that holds the keys to our freedom. Mm-hmm. The child within holds the keys to our liberation. And if we don't work with the child and we just allow it to sit in the corner with its face in its knees, and it's still at this place where we haven't processed what has happened to us, then we are going to be continuously repeating the same patterns and cycles through our relationships, through our work, through everything else. And so this is the most important part of our healing. And the breath can illuminate not only the energy that we're carrying, the stuck energy, but it can bring us to those places in which we need to recapitulate this relationship we have with this child. And all it comes down to is just love and acceptance. Mm-hmm. How can we love and accept these parts of ourselves that we've abandoned, rejected, betrayed, and lost.
Mm. Mm. The other thing that I experienced too is sort of this, like, I want to say unconscious nature of how much emotions are stuck in me that are unprocessed. But for me, I've said this a few times on the show that what I've come to understand about processing trauma is the best way to process it is just literally feel your feelings. Like that's what we're trying to get to, right?
That's it, man.
But I feel like the breath is very powerful because it's sort of forcing you to be with what is present. And oftentimes for those of us who have been living unconsciously or in a disassociative way, what is present is these things we've been carrying. In order to get to true presence, you have to sort of take off those muddy layers, and you take off those muddy layers by just feeling them. So it's like the breath helps bring us back into that state where we're like, oh, I'm aware of these muddy layers on top of me that I need to experience and feel first, whether that's crying, screaming, whatever it is, in order to get to the true nature of who I am.
Correct. Yeah. You said it best, dude. That's perfectly stated. Feel to heal. So there's kind of, I teach a class called emotional alchemy, because again, most people are operating at a level in which they're still stuck in their 8-year-old self and they don't know how to process their emotions. And it's very simple. You feel it. And I'll just kind of, I think this could be a value to maybe someone listening to this podcast. I take people through a very simple process. We tune in with first we tune in with what we're feeling. Okay. So let's just say you're feeling anxiety. Okay. Where do you feel the anxiety? Where's it showing up? It's in my solar plexus. Okay. It's in your solar plexus. What's happening in your solar plexus? What are the sensations that you're feeling in your solar plexus? I'm feeling some tightness, some constriction. It's kind of like a little bit of a shooting pain, this butterfly feeling, whatever it is. Okay, great. So we've identified the sensations. What colors are showing up? It's kind of like dark gray, black. It's very uncomfortable. Wonderful. Okay. Dark gray, black, constricted, tight energy in my solar plexus. Now breathe into that, feel into that. What emotions are present? Yeah, I'm feeling a little worried, but oh, I feel this fear that's underneath. Okay. What's the fear you're feeling? I'm feeling fearful of the unknown. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where I'm going to be in the next couple months. There's a lot of things shifting in my life. Okay, wonderful. Fear of the unknown. Take him into the fear of the unknown. Follow the rabbit hole here. What's the worst that can happen, right? Understanding, unraveling the fear. The fear itself is a messenger. It's a beautiful divine messenger that can bring us to this beautiful place where we realize that the fear is all the illusion that we've created about perhaps worrying about the future or something that happened in the past or whatever it might be. But when we get to the core of it and we just simply feel it, we allow it, we embrace it, we accept it, and then we let it go.
Mm.
And that may seem like that very easy process. It can be. At first, that you have to understand how to work with the emotion itself. It's just tapping into the intelligence of what's there. We don't get overly attached to them because they're fleeting, they're changing, they're temporary, but you can be in that stuck in holding pattern for so long. So by simply doing that, working with your breath, you can release any emotion.
Mm. If you're enjoying this episode, please consider sharing it with at least one friend or family member who you think could benefit from hearing it. You help us grow and reach more people by sharing it with those around you. Also, be sure to head to the show notes to check out our membership offerings, membership marketplace, and more. In nearly all cases with modern health systems, you're waiting months for appointments only to spend a mere 10 minutes with a doctor who quickly hands out a generic diagnosis that is likely rooted in a total misunderstanding of health and causes, and then you're offered a one-size-fits-all medication or invasive treatments with unpleasant side effects. If this sounds all too familiar, consider a different approach with the New Biology Clinic, founded by Dr. Tom Cowan, a respected natural health doctor, author, and speaker. Dr. Cowan's holistic perspective on health and wellness and a deep understanding of the true nature of health and disease sets this clinic apart. With the new biology clinic, it's not about quick fixes and suppressing symptoms. The practitioners take time to understand your unique story, recognizing that health is unique to the individual and that illnesses have a variety of causes, physically and metaphysically. Members of the New Biology Clinic enjoy a flat monthly fee that includes a range of valuable services like health consults as needed, practitioner-led live streams on diverse health topics, access to a members-only resource library, and multiple live group sessions every month. These sessions cover fitness, breathing integration, biofield tuning, guided meditation, EFT tapping, and much more. Unlike traditional healthcare systems that thrive on frequent visits, prescriptions, treatments, and suppressing symptoms, the New Biology Clinic's motivation is to make you healthy and keep you that way. Visit newbiologyclinic.com to learn more and use code THEWAYFORWARD for $50 off your account activation. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com to receive $150 off your account activation. Your journey to genuine healing begins here. If you're listening to or watching the show, chances are you probably look out at the state of the world and think, I know there is a much better way of doing things. So many of us have a vision of living off-grid with like-minded people, unschooling kids together, building community together, trading and bartering together, growing food together, and sourcing clean, spring-fed water together. And with modern society headed towards the cliff of tyranny and the centralization of power, it's important to consider a life where we can thrive irrespective of what happens with the rest of society. Most of us know what we want and why we want it, but few have cracked the code on how to achieve it. Our friend Jonathan England has cracked the code on the how. On August 3rd, he is hosting the Off-Grid Dream Life event where he'll show you the four steps to transform your vision of an idyllic eco-village into a reality. Imagine being a part of a sovereign community with its own food, water, shelter, energy, currency system possibly, allowing you to live in harmony with nature and with each other. No more bills, fresh clean water right out of the ground, organic food picked off the land daily, and surrounded with like-minded people who share your values. If this sounds like your dream, please register for this free virtual event by visiting offgriddreamlife.com or just head to the link in the show notes to learn more. You said something earlier about breath being related to chi, life force, prana, and it brought up something that Dr. Cowan talked about with me before. I posted this article on my Telegram channel. I'll post it in the show notes too. And I forget exactly what it's titled, but it's something to the effect of we're not actually breathing in oxygen. And what it's pointing to is that breath is all about electrifying our bodies. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with actually breathing in oxygen. If you think about that as it relates to ether, it's just like we're pulling more of this etheric energy that's it's like the perfect free energy technology, essentially, right? Anything related to that?
You know, I'm really glad that you brought that up because it's also been something.
Heard that before, by the way, that we're not breathing in oxygen and it's actually just electrifying our bodies?
Not quite to that extent, okay. But what my sort of thesis is and how I've been able to, you know, dive a little bit deeper into this is, I've really studied a lot about the electromagnetic field mm-hmm. of the body, right? And the toroidal field.
I'm obsessed with it, dude.
Dude, it's
obsessed. I mean, that's why I talk about Eileen's work like every other episode in the human biofield. Obsessed.
Yeah, it's very important work that's oftentimes underlooked or underestimated. Yeah. And when we can understand what's actually happening and how the electromagnetic field, especially when we look at the electrical charge of our heart, right? Mm-hmm. The human heart and the spiritual heart and how that extends out to create this beautiful toroidal field and auric field. And when you breathe, so what I've kind of tapped into as well, which I didn't really share much before because it's multi-layered, is that what I've perceived is that the deeper I breathe, the more I receive this electrical charge, and I'm extending my electromagnetic field to grow to greater heights and greater distances. And therefore, it's like what I was sharing before about the Yeshua example of creating this force field of light around you. This is simply just taking in this electrical energy and creating literally a force field that you might not be able to see with the human eye, but if you tapped into the higher realms, you'll be able to see this. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely healing energy.
Incredible. Dude, that's why in the mornings when I'm consistent, and I need to be better about this lately. I've been doing too much shit, but I start my days with sun gazing while doing Qigong, and it's a very breath-based Qigong, bare feet on the earth. That, like that right there, those three things together, the breath with staring at the sun with your bare feet on the earth all together is like, it's like that one meme, like the mind exploding meme, but that's how it feels, man. And I know that when I'm doing that consistently, I feel so grounded and centered. And this is another thing too, and I'm sure you've experienced this at points in your life. When we get so into our work, we like lose sight of, wow, it's so simple. It literally takes freaking 15 minutes, 10 minutes, maybe even less, just to come back into presence and release some of that tension that you're carrying around on your shoulders just by breathing, and focusing on your breath. That's it.
That's it, man. It's so simple.
Yeah.
We've made it so complex. And I love that practice, by the way. I do the same. You know, the sun.
You a Qigong guy?
Yeah. Love Qigong, yeah. Dude. I've been doing Qigong for a while. I love it.
That's awesome.
And, you know, with the Qigong, with the breath, right? Like the sacred movements. And, you know, what Qigong is doing, you're literally manipulating your toroidal field.
Right.
So the way in which you move your arms and the way the different movements happen, and with the breath, it's a perfect combination. And of course, taking in the sun, taking in the earth with your feet, it's like, you can't get better than that. And literally, like you said, 10, 15 minutes, boom, you're centered. And then you can do maintenance throughout the day. So I'm sure we'll get into this in a little bit about the gene keys. There's the art in working with your own gene keys is contemplation, and contemplation takes place with several pauses throughout the day. When you pause for 3 minutes every 3 hours throughout the day, you come back to center, and through this pause, you can breathe, you can do some movements or whatever, but this rewires and recalibrates your nervous system to exist in a more grounded and present state throughout the day.
Have you established that as like a habit? Or I know some people set reminders on their phones, which is so sad that we even have to do that. It's like setting a reminder every 3 hours for them to like check in and come back into center. But is it just like a habitual thing for you now at this point?
I used to do that, and that's good, because actually the Gene Keys has an app, which I'll plug. It's called the Triple Flame, and it's exactly that. You can set the notification, and you can do like a silent thing, you can do like some music, and just pause for 3, 5, or 10 minutes, and it's actually really good. I recommend it. But now I know when I've reached my threshold. Right, so if I'm working on my computer, I'm doing something, I'm like, oh yeah, I can feel that I've reached my threshold. It's time to pause. I'll go out, sit in my beanbag chair in the beautiful Mexican sun in the mountains, taking some sun, taking some breath, and I'll feel recharged to go back to whatever I was doing.
So simple. So simple. I'm sure everyone watching or listening to this could find just a couple of minutes in their day, a few times, just to reconnect like that.
And you can do it anywhere. Think about this. Yeah. Like people getting pissed off and stressed out, they're in a traffic jam. Use that moment to pause and just be with your breath, you know, and wherever you are, in your cubicle, in your office, or it doesn't matter, you can always find those little gaps, right? To just like recalibrate yourself. And when you do that more and you make it a habit, you literally are reprogramming your nervous system to exist from, again, where you might be in a sympathetic activated state to a more parasympathetic relaxed state.
Mm-hmm. Is there any breath style that you recommend to quickly energize your body?
Yeah. So, I mean,
breath of fire is great.
Okay. I mean, or, you know, you can do, like breath of fire is in and out of the nose.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to practice?
Yeah, let's do it.
Dude. All right, cool. We'll do that. So this is a more sympathetic base, different than the parasympathetic base. So we'll just close down our eyes, and you might, for someone that's not used to this, just place one of your right hand on your belly, where your navel is. And we're almost going to imagine like we're just focusing on the exhale. The inhale will happen naturally, and we're going to be breathing in and out of our nose. So we'll start a little slow to get the rhythm, and then we'll pick it up and we'll do it for a couple minutes. So just breathe naturally in through the nose, out of the mouth. Again, another deep breath in and exhale. And we'll begin inhaling in and out of the nose. And you can just keep going, feeling that pump of air, feeling just the natural rise and fall of the belly, of the navel coming in and out. Again, the inhale happens naturally, and just continuing to move in that fast-paced rhythm. We'll stay there for another 30, 40 seconds. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, inhale. Hold the breath. And you want to squeeze the root, squeeze your navel, pulling the energy in and up. Navel lock, jaw lock, allowing the energy to rise. And slow, steady exhale. And just coming back to the natural breath, natural rhythm. And so that practice is great, right?
Use that as your pre-workout.
Yeah, it's great. You know, do that. So that's, I always recommend starting at like 3 minutes, because at 3 minutes you begin to cleanse the blood and detoxify the blood. You begin to move the lymph. It's a great way if you're kind of getting off caffeine to start doing that. I mean, you can work your way up to 7 minutes. That's what I do. And you just get a full, like you're floating.
You go hit your PR in the gym. Every
yeah.
Time.
Yeah. 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 So that's the way to do it. But that's one of the more sympathetic breaths. They call it breath of fire, because you're awakening the power, the fire, which is in your navel. And so, you know, there's other like mouth breathing techniques, which is definitely more like that holotropic style. That's more sympathetic based.
When I do that, I definitely feel buzzing.
Yeah, because you're hyperventilating, right? And you're like really taking in that. I have actually...
With breath of fire just now, like for me, I was really trying to pay attention to how I feel in my body. I feel very just centered. And present and focused.
Uh-huh.
Almost like I just like had a little bit of nicotine or maybe caffeine. More nicotine for me.
More nicotine. Like,
Yeah.
Yeah, you get that more. I like that, especially during the day, because when you're working with mouth breathing, that can, for someone that's not used to that, that can get really intense. And I've seen people like fall over and pass out, you know, so the breath of fire is kind of like that medium range where you can really work with that and still have like really buzzing results.
Just so interesting that it's like there's different recipes for different feelings that you want to feel in your body just by doing different breathing techniques. Like that really is crazy to think about.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible.
You know, we take pills, we take supplements, and I'm all for like natural supplements to, you know, for cognition and focus and all that. I like all of that. But the breath can do that, you know, and it's like it's your own inner pharmacy that you're turning on.
You know, and there's something to be said about that too. It's like the more that we, and I use supplements myself as well. I mean, like I take Bio-Optimizers magnesium because it's awesome, but I will say that the more we buy into supplements and tools and gadgets, I think that pushes us away from recognizing that a lot of these things are innate. They're right here and we can access them ourselves for free. And that's the issue. It's like, of course, like, you know, we have this biocharger that I was just showing you. It's a cool toy. And I have the Brown's gas machine right there. It's awesome. And I use them, but I think that there's a slippery slope to just failing to realize that a lot of these processes, a lot of this vibrance that we're seeking, this state of health that we want, is able to be accessed endogenously just by our own breath and just simple acts like putting our feet on the ground and just moving our body, these movements with Qigong and getting sunlight. And yeah, that's why it's so amazing just sitting here with you, because it's a reminder of that.
Dude, I absolutely love that, because, you know, look where, again, no no qualms on biohacking. You know, I think there's legitimacy to it, and there's a lot of great tools and technologies that we now have access to that are kind of coming back into the forefront. And I'm all about it. I love gadgets and stuff. But again, I'm all about practicality and simplicity. For me, like, the more practical and simple I can make my life, the better. Mm-hmm. And so the breath is that, grounding is that, sunlight is that. We have the technology. It's all around us. The earth is technology, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the biofield of the earth, the sun, the breath, all of this is literally helping us on every single level. Mm-hmm. And we can manipulate how we feel, how we think, how we live, how we lead, how we relate, how we create through the power of our breath. It's like, wow.
I guess you could reframe it as, like, when it comes to these gadgets and even things like plant medicines, it's like, that's doubling up. It's using, as long sure. as you're remembering your own endogenous ability to access these states and access this vibrant state of health, then these can just be, I guess, additional boosts, if you will, you know, these, sure. these other tools. And of course, like I said, plant medicines and herbs and supplements, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's like a perfect segue to talking about, Breathe with Cannabis. But before we get to that, I want you to touch on your best experience on a substance of some sorts or on a plant medicine and breathing.
Yeah. So, all right. I had an experience. This is what kind of woke me up to the marriage between breathwork and cannabis and how powerful it truly is. And, you know, I started using cannabis when I was 13 years old in my buddy's garage, doing crazy bong rips and elevators, right? Like, yeah. I just experimenting as a kid,
right?
He had an older brother. We used to take his weed and just go and see what's up, see what was up. And, you know, I'm glad for those days. I'm glad I had those days. But back in 2000, when I got home from the Peace Corps, 2015, 2016, that time, I started to really be intentional with what I was doing. And I really wanted to understand how cannabis can be a spiritual aid and ally, because I knew it to be so because of how I would inevitably like turn on my intuition and reach these different states, but I never really set a core intention with it. And like anything, especially with like plants, they have their own consciousness, like I said. So when you begin to use it with intention and seed an intention into the use of it, something else happens. And cannabis, like, I think you'll be talking to Ryan Sprague, who obviously is going to do it much better than I can say it in the form of how cannabis can be used. But what I will say is that cannabis has been such a plant that has been highly abused, right? Because it's the most accessible. It's they call the people's plant, right? As Stephen Gray refers to it in Cannabis and Spirituality. And so it's the most accessible, but it's been the most abused and also the most stigmatized. But cannabis is one of the most powerful plants. And when used with intention, you can begin to expand. So back in 2016, I seed an intention. I want to go deeper within myself. I want to see what's alive in my inner world. Well, I'm sitting in I'm living in Boston, Massachusetts at the time. And me and my partner, me and her, we take a rip and we start doing breath work. Well, from that place, I'm laying down on the couch. She's laying down. The breath work ends. We finish that. And I'm still laying there. And I start going into all of these visual worlds. And I had done ayahuasca previous to that. It was very similar. And I start going into this very deep trance, transcendental state. And I start channeling this information. And she's recording and asking me questions, like all of these things. And we're into like Dolores Cannon and all of these things at this time. And I'm literally in a channeled state for like an hour and I'm accessing all these different fragments of my soul.
Are you conscious during this?
No, I'm like in the, if you talk to some like channels, I'm like seat. In the background, right? Yeah. Like I know my body's there, but I'm like, if I can explain it, it's like my body, and this is what happens now when I channel or I give any sort of intuitive messages, it's like my body shrinks and my energy field grows exponentially. And so I'm just like in this place, I'm like, holy shit, like this is breath and cannabis. And from there, I'm like, oh my God, there's like something to this. I want to do this more. And so we started doing this experiment. We have this like series of recordings that we've never released that I was channeling all of this stuff. But I was also something that cannabis does, what the breath also does, it puts you in touch with your body and what's the awareness of your body and where you're holding tension. And it's also a truth agent. It's a truth serum. So it will show you places within yourself where you are not living in integrity. Mm. And so between the channeling, between doing shadow work and using it and also mixing it with the breath, I'm like, okay, there's something to this. And then of course, many years later, Breathe with Cannabis is born.
Wow. So that was like the idea for Breathe with Cannabis was back then.
Back then it was seeded. And then I met Ryan and I'm like,
how'd you meet Ryan?
Dude, that's a great question. I don't even remember. I think we met online somehow we were connected. And I was like, instantly, I'm like, dude, this guy's the man. Like I can speak to cannabis pretty well, but like this guy's been in the game.
We'll save that. Cause I'm going to bring him on after this.
So long story short, you know, like breathwork and cannabis and what I've found with, you know, there's a myriad of plant medicines. Those two, they work together synergistically and coherently very well.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was touching on. You said it more eloquently than I could. It's like these just help up level or bring you back into more vibrance and presence. But the other thing that I've heard people have pretty incredible experiences doing is taking mushrooms and doing breath work. Have you ever played with that at all?
Yeah, I've played with that and yeah, other plant medicines with the breath. I think the breath integrates pretty well. With mushrooms, I find it to be a little bit different of an experience. It's, what's the best way to say this? It's not as what I found to be cohesive and more like malleable, workable. Because mushrooms can take you really deep, right? Where cannabis, you can go really deep, but you can still sort of understand where you're at and have like a more manageable experience. And I don't want to say from a place of control because we're not trying to control it, but we can be more alert and awake to what's happening. And you can begin to understand how things are pairing together and working together. Whereas if you do a bigger dose of mushrooms and you're doing breath work, I mean, you're floating in the ether somewhere. And people have had very visual experiences and still do with cannabis. And I do as well. But it's you're easier to come back from that than mushrooms could last 6-7 hours, right?
So, I'll share my experience with the
please. I'd love to hear
with cannabis. So the only thing I had to contextualize it against was the experience I had doing dimensional breath work with Andrew Genovese, and again, that was just breath work, and I accessed some pieces of myself that I needed to heal, right? And I had some preconceived notions on what I think I might experience based on what was on the forefront of my mind and the stresses I was experiencing at that time. And it blew me away because it was things that I was not consciously thinking about that I became very aware were still lingering in the background related to, you know, some things from my childhood, like I said. Anyway, so that's the only thing I had to contextualize it against. So I sit with you. I think we're at Aaron's house. There's like 20 of us there in the ceremony. And we do some vaporized cannabis and then go into, I think it was like, what, like an hour and a half, 2 hours of breath work or something like that?
Yeah, about an hour.
An hour, okay, hour of breath work. And it's done to music, which I want to get into next, because that's with your partner, business partner, Johnny Buffalo, and you guys have an incredible app. But anyway, so we're breathing rhythmically to this incredible music. And I don't know if it was the song that was on that triggered this or if it was just like my own subconscious triggering this, but it just paired perfectly that this song that was on had some like jazzy undertones to it, right? And instantly in my mind pops this vision of me with slick back hair. There's cigar smoke in the background, like sort of billowing up. I'm wearing these shaded, like tinted glasses, a big gold chain, and a purple velvet, turtleneck. And that's what popped in my head. And I was like, I took that as, okay, I need to be more playful in my life. Okay, cool. And then it transitioned into the next song. And the next song had some very sort of like primal indigenous sounds to it. And instantly this vision of my wife, Kylie, popped in my head with her with like this like eagle sort of outfit on, but it was like a very tribal eagle like dress that she was wearing. And I was like, wow, my wife is like a warrior goddess. And then it went into my son and then into my daughter. And it was all really beautiful. I guess like not sort of trauma healing esque experience. It was more like playful and joyful. And I just popped up from that. I was like, wow, that was wild. I don't know what to make of this. I was just like laughing several times throughout my Breathe with Cannabis experience. But yeah, so that was my experience. And it was so funny contrasting that against other people who had experiences going back and healing some deep trauma. And then mine, I'm like, wow, this is really playful. So it's different for everybody. And that's what I needed at that time, because I did need to bring more play and joy and fun and just like sort of let loose into my life.
I love that you had that experience, because that is maybe overlooked as like, oh, nothing really happened. But, you know, play, joy, lightheartedness, these are all very key things that we attributes and qualities that we need to recultivate, mm-hmm. because we live in a world that's so fucking serious.
Yeah,
it's like we're over serious all the time. And it's like, how can we begin to heal the shadow of seriousness, come back into joy, into play? And so that's a beautiful experience. And we've done so many. We do them every single month online, virtually, and we also do them in person. And we have hundreds of people that have had a myriad of different experiences, from what someone says healing 100 years of worth of trauma, to reconnecting with my ancestors, to what, you know, whatever it is, both breath and cannabis. And even again, I want to state that like cannabis and breath are amazing together, and they help you access you like these higher states, maybe a little quicker if you're not used to doing breath work, but breath alone can also do that.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about Beats and Breath now.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
Because you have an incredible app that has all these incredible tracks and sort of these guided breath work practices. So yeah, let's touch on that.
Yeah. So Beats and Breath was started, you know, I love the evolution of things and how things come together. When you're in alignment with yourself, you naturally magnetize and call forth different people into your life to support whatever it is that your mission is and what you're building. And so back in 2020, during the whole pandemic, it was a whole situation where everybody's in lockdown, but I'm in this little bubble in Buffalo, New York, and we're in this beautiful space outside in the countryside at my friend's house. And we're hosting weekly circles, men's circles, breath work, all this stuff, having a great time. And one time, I can't remember what month it was, doesn't really matter, but I think it was in the summertime. And my buddy Mike asked me to facilitate breath work at this men's circle for like 40 guys. And my buddy Johnny, who now is my business partner, had done, funny enough, I didn't know this beforehand. He had told me this after. He did a YouTube past life regression video, took a big bong rip, and found out that he was like, had all of these codes of like sound healing in him. And he's a musical savant. Uh-huh. And he's like going through all this experience, and he got prompted. He's like, I gotta go leave New York City. He was like a professional beatboxer in New York City, singing a cappella group, creating music. He's like, I gotta go back to Buffalo. So he drove back to Buffalo. He got in contact with this girl, and he's like, where's the closest like conscious spiritual community? And this girl's like, go to my friend Mike's house out in Colden. And so he goes out, finds himself in this men's circle. I'm facilitating breath work. And he comes up to me after. He's like, dude, that was profound. I just told me this experience. And he's like, who makes your music? And I'm like, nobody, dude. I've been literally praying in a vision for 3 months for somebody to ask me that question, because I need somebody to help make music for this vision I have for this unique style of breath work. And he's like, I'll do it. So we literally in 6 weeks from that moment, it was like this like rekindling of soul brothers, came together, created an album, like a concept album called Soul Rise. It was 5 33-minute breathwork journeys through the five elements. And
that is so cool.
5 33-minute journeys. That's a lot of music.
So you included ether.
Ether was in there.
Oh, okay.
That's it, man. That's so cool. This is the last track. And it's my favorite one out of all the ones we created. So we went on to distribute that and sell that album, and it did really well. Like, we were just like, anybody want this? We were selling the album, and people were having these breakthrough experiences. And from that moment, we started facilitating just in the garage, in the shala, every single week. We were holding like cacao and breathwork ceremonies. And in February, we were in a mushroom journey. And I don't often tell this story, so it's actually good. So we were in a mushroom journey at my friend Mike's. Really cold, freezing outside. We're inside drinking cacao mushroom drink. And we start gathering into this circle as the medicine's kicking in. We're playing music. And someone brings up like the Care Bears. And we're like, who's your bear? What's your name? And it comes around and Johnny goes, I'm Beats Bear. And it comes around to me. I'm like, I'm Breath Bear. And I'm like, Beats and Breath. So we started our company literally a week later off of a mushroom journey, Beats and Breath. And I'm like, it pairs super well together.
Dude, right? Yeah. You know, what's so funny is like, there's a lot of stigma, even in the sort of truther consciousness community, around people overusing psychedelics. And I will say there are a lot of people who are using it very unintentionally, but it's like, it's very clear for you that you're using them intentionally, and it's bringing you actual business decisions in your real life that are making a positive impact. Dude. Like the one with like Breathe with Cannabis that came about because of that journey with your partner at the time. And then this one, Beats and Breath, you're talking about Care Bears, and it just popped in. It's like, wow, this makes sense.
And the name rings. I'm like, Beats and Breath. Like, that's what we do. Johnny's the beat maker. I'm the breath maker. Yeah. We pray together. And so what we've called it is, you know, our sort of technology that we've termed and our practice is called sonic breathwork.
Yeah.
And when we work, and a lot of people are pairing breath and sound together, it's beautiful. But when we do it with really pure intention, so like how we layer it and what we do with it, we stack on top of it. And the breath and sound are the primordial forces of creation.
Mm.
And so when you put them together in this primal ancient way with this modern twist of these 808 trap and hip hop beats on ancient instrumentation and layered with binaurals and solfeggio frequencies, it becomes a healing technology. And that's why we have, like, you know, again, this is not me bragging, but we have thousands of people that have had amazing breakthrough experiences using these tracks because we put pure love and intention into the creation process of them.
And then you layer that with cannabis too.
That's an optional thing. Breathe with cannabis, then boom, you just got another medicine stack on top.
Yeah. Because we had that experience for the audience at Confluence for back in April.
And
dude, it was incredible. Everyone that did it, most people that did it, said it was incredible. I didn't talk to literally everyone, but so many people were leaving that like, oh my God, that was one of the best experiences I've ever had. Amanda Vollmer, who had just had her ayahuasca experience like 2 weeks before, she was like, oh my God, this was such an incredible addition to that. It was incredible. And I had an incredible experience. I didn't do it in Confluence, but I did it a few months prior. And it was amazing, man. It was amazing. And those tracks that you and Johnny produced together were awesome. Just incredible.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah. It's special. It's very special. And I'm glad to be creating this healing technology for people.
Yeah. Beautiful. The last thing you wanted to touch on, I think, was gene keys, right?
Yeah. You know, like, I don't have to go super deep. That's a whole episode in itself.
Yeah.
But you know, the gene keys and what I've discovered in pairing it with breath, because sort of how I weave medicines and tools and practices together, it creates a new energy, right? And so the gene keys, in its simplest essence, is a system for self-discovery and personal transformation that combines your personal astrological makeup with the wisdom teachings and the archetypes of the Chinese I Ching and the 64 archetypes within that I Ching. And so when you put those together, you get a blueprint, a roadmap, a map of your soul that is sort of activated. And when you
look, similar to human design, right?
Similar to human design because they have the same foundation. So the gates in human design, which would be correlated to the 64 archetypes, same thing in gene keys. It's the keys that are correlated to the 64 archetypes.
Got it.
The way I describe human design, which I love human design, I'm not super deep into it as I am the gene keys, it's a body graph, right? And it's a more masculine orientated system. Gene Keys is like a more feminine wisdom teachings. So how the Gene Keys came about through Richard Rudd was he went into a dark room and he went into a cave and he got these downloads and over 7 years channeled the text of the Gene Keys. And, you know, for me working with the Gene Keys and how you work with the Gene Keys, it's profound and it's extremely accurate to really help you highlight and help you understand, clarify who you are and why you're here. And so the premise is that these codes, these genetic codes within your personal genetic makeup exist within your DNA. And as you contemplate the transmissions of the Gene Keys, as you listen to them, as you read them, and as you go deep into them, you turn on these codes. Well, on top of that, there's no faster way to turn on these codes than to breathe and to understand that, you know, through this journey of working with your Gene Keys, which every single Gene Key has three frequencies, a shadow frequency, a gift frequency, and a city frequency, the city being the highest expression or potential of that archetype of that key. And so you have these 11 keys in your profile. And as you work through the different spheres of your life's work and your purpose and so forth, you activate these Gene Keys and therefore then rise into a higher expression of yourself. And existing within your gift state, you are in greater service to the world and you're existing in a more authentic way in how you relate and how you create and how you lead and therefore. And so the idea is that you discover your higher purpose, you open your heart and relationships, and you liberate your prosperity. And so it's a magical, powerful journey that I found to be an excellent tool to really help me expand myself, my work, and my relationships and beyond.
Mm. Are you the first one that you know of that's thought to pair breath with Gene Keys?
I'm sure there may be other people doing it, but the way in which I run my, you know, programs and my groups with people, we do it very intentionally. And, I'm, you know, something that I found to be that extra layer of technology, which just like really expands the teachings.
Mm. I love that you call it technology. That comes from Kundalini yoga, calling it a technology, right?
Yeah, it's a technology. It's an energy that's birthed from it. But, and Richard talks about, you know, the founder of the Gene Keys, he talks about how really true prosperity is to breathe. To breathe is to prosper.
Mm. Breathe is to prosper. I love that.
It's so simple, right? Yeah. But it's so profound. And we think about prosperity in the context of money. And yes, financial prosperity is a part of that conversation. But simply just being alive, being in this human experience, you are prospering if you are breathing. And it's like, wow. Yeah.
I bet that hits really deep with you because of your near-death experience too. It's like you have that to contextualize it against, like, wow, how grateful I am just to be breathing right now.
Exactly. You know, and yeah, 100%. You know, we often get caught up and we want more, we want this. And I've been there, you know, I get in those states. Oh, I want this to happen or whatever. It's like, and I love, and I'll end on this because this is actually a really important point. To tie back into the idea of prosperity and the idea of breath. So prosperity in the context of the Gene Keys is that you have always what you need. It may be just a little bit more than enough. If we're talking about money, it might just be a little bit more than enough. Or based on your human myth and dharma at that period of life, it might be a lot more than enough. You may need more resources to build what you're building or to create what you create, but you will always be taken care of and that you always have what you need. Whereas wealth, again, not knocking wealth, but the sort of way in which we frame wealth in our society is I need everything. I need to hoard and stack and all of these things, which comes in the sense of this like false sense of security that we find through that medium. Mm-hmm. And that in itself creates tension and insecurity and inadequacy because it's stemming from that place. Whereas prosperity is I'm breathing, therefore I'm prospering. I have everything I need. There is nothing that I need. And I just have to come into alignment with myself and with my breath. And therefore, I naturally magnetize all of the opportunities, people, and resources I need by existing in that simple state.
Mm. Beautiful. I love that. I love that so much. Man. Okay. I think we will have all of your programs and everything else in the show notes. Is there anything you want to plug specifically right now though?
You know, I'll just tell people, because this episode's been about breath, you know, and because this conversation's been about breath,
went an hour and a half, a little more than an hour and a half on breath.
Dude.
Like that's epic. That's pretty epic. Yeah, that's
I love it. I'm lit up right now. So, you know, simply, okay, like we had some practices on here people can just try. If you do nothing else, just do that. Stop, pause a few minutes a day, you're good to go. Like that will start to build a habit. But if you want to take it deeper, I'm personally all about giving a lot of value up front to people, because for me, it's like, I don't want to hoard any of this stuff. Like this is all stuff that we can use. So if people are interested, definitely download the Beats and Breath app. It's free on Apple and Google. When you download it, we give you access to a free 7-day breathwork challenge journey that you can watch as well as videos. If you want to dive deeper into kind of what, why, and how, and if you do nothing but that, that's amazing. And then of course we have a whole collection and library if you become a subscriber, and we every week we add new sessions and journeys, meditation, sound healing, all of that is included on the Beats and Breath app. So, you know, and then anything else Gene Keys related, it's on my website, christopheraugust.co. And then if you're interested in Breathe with Cannabis, we'll link that to breathewithcannabis.com.
Highly recommend attending that in person.
Yeah, yeah.
It is incredible. It's awesome.
So, thank you, brother.
Dude, thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, brother. Thank you.